Episode 10, The Man in the Middle Episode.
When all you have is a search engine, everything looks like a database.
Man, I have like a cypherpunk hard on right now.
Privacy is nothing to be granted. Privacy is something you take yourself.
They've got the Mossad, the CIA, and Hillary Clinton behind them.
We're now beyond what the Stasi could even dream of.
Reality Exploit Roundtable.
Hello and welcome to Reality Exploit Roundtable, episode 10. On this episode, we'll be talking about the U.S. embracing terrorists, the U.S. inventing terrorists, ridding the internet of terrorists, and Mexican special forces being used as death squads. My name is Voodoo, and I'll be your host and moderator. I've got nothing to add to that, so let's meet our today's panelists. Steps away from the crypt containing the sometimes white, sometimes black star that is the center of the world, Plato.
Hey, what's up?
The guy on Big Brother who showered with his pants on, Wise Guy.
Yo!
From AggersRadio.com, the only website ballsy enough to host Reality Exploit Roundtable, Hero White.
Hey, everybody.
And the fashion designer responsible for the smoker's balaclava, Smuggler.
Hey ho.
Winter's definitely coming, so let's get right on to our first topic. An FBI task force raided the Portland, Oregon home of Leah Lynn Plant and Matt Duran. According to the warrant left behind by the home invaders, the task force was looking for black clothing, paint, sticks, computers and cell phones, and, quote, anarchist materials or literature, unquote. In what may be the beginnings of an anarchist witch hunt, the FBI has called anarchists criminals seeking an ideology to justify their actions in a field guide on domestic terrorism. According to the FBI document, whereas past anarchists were dedicated, organized, and motivated individuals, today's anarchists are not dedicated to a cause, but rather unorganized, reactive, paranoid, distrustful, and non-cooperative. These dastardly criminals are highly educated and hang out in underground clubs, coffee houses, internet cafes, and college campuses. It sounds like a really bunch of toughs here, if you ask me. Wise Guy, if possessing anarchist material becomes evidence of some sort of crime or criminal intent, doesn't that validate what anarchists have been always saying would happen?
Well, absolutely. I think that anyone who has read the history of the United States and looked at beginning with the alien sedition laws under John Adams, and then similar laws that were forced on the populace just prior and when the United States entered World War I, we can see that the U.S. really doesn't tolerate any kind of dissent under certain situations. And since the United States has been in a state of emergency as far as executive order since, I think, I'm not sure, maybe it was FDR. Anyway, it's been in, for like decades, been in a that kind of legal area, I think the, many people in the federal government have no qualms at all about quashing anyone they think is a threat to the hegemony of the U.S.
Hero, you're old enough to remember slavery in the United States. Isn't this just the old argument that if you educate the slaves, if you allow them to read, that pretty soon they're going to get this idea in their heads that they don't need the masters anymore?
Yeah, I don't know that these people that are behind this type of stuff are thinking in those type of high-level concepts. I think that this is just the people with funding for their military weapons and riot gear and all that type of stuff to go in and pick an easy target that they can go after and hold up. So it's not really, I don't think there's some grand plan out there to squash the anarchists. It's just more like, let's just go after them because they're an easy target.
I think significantly, they mentioned anarchist materials. And if anyone has been paying attention, there was a Wired article a number of years ago in which John Gilmore, who runs Privacy Project, was stating that his investigation through Freedom of Information Act documents showed that the Department of Homeland Security was routinely collecting information on what books people were reading as they passed through security checkpoints at the border and, at airports. So in the case here where these people were being investigated, they were looking for this anarchist material. I think it should really be a warning to anyone who is not only passing through security, but also what kind of information is stored on their e-book readers. More and more people are carrying that, also their mobile phones that they might be using, and whether or not they have security that would be adequate to prevent Department of Homeland Security to read the kinds of books that they happen to be reading.
There have been cases in the past where the TSA has actually looked up Amazon buying lists, what you bought on Amazon, to find out if you might be a dangerous person. So especially if you were into Arabic language and stuff like that, that would usually trigger something if you're trying to enter the United States.
Yeah, I think that calls for, that's one reason for anonymously paid and anonymously acquired piracy type services out there to bypass these type of state integrated tracking mechanisms in these things. And in my original comment, I said that these guys they're just looking for easy targets. Yeah, they are. But when you're on the receiving end of this, I cannot tell you how many times over the past 10, 15 something years that I have not been able to get particular books that I've wanted to get, because there's no way in the world that I'm going to order these books off of Amazon just because if you correlate the topics of these books with each other, it just starts to paint a particular type of picture that could put you on some type of a list, only for the fact, not because you're just download, you're trying to not like if you're buying like books about how to make bombs, but just on particular ideological topics like anarchism related to those things, still going to put you on some type of a list. And I've always assumed that that would possibly happen at some time with my identification, what you said, Smuggler, with them looking up a particular book list. So I'm all for pirate services that allow people to get information anonymously and pay with anonymously, so that what they read is not held against them. And one other real quick point was, a couple of weeks ago on the No Agenda show, they played a clip about, maybe some of you guys may have heard it. It was Wolf Blitzer, and he was going off on I think it was the Republican or Democratic convention down in the South about anarchist. So the whole anarchist thing is similar to the terrorist thing. It's like this thing that if someone in the United States hears something about a terrorist or an anarchist, they have the same type of reaction as if they've just been confronted with a large spider in their closet or something. So it's
memetic programming. I mean, this is a concerted effort by the media and the government to make people think that anarchists are black bloc terrorists who go around smashing windows and throwing Molotov cocktails. And obviously that's entirely different from the political philosophy of anarchism and voluntarism. But if you talk to grandma in her nursing home, she's watching Fox News and she thinks that an anarchist is a black bloc wearing terrorist.
I think that it's obvious that governments all over the world, whenever they need to control their populations, use fear, as Hermann Göring would say, the famous Nazi, and that whenever there's a need, they have to invent a straw man, another horseman of the apocalypse that they can trot out to keep the population fearful and in need of their services for protection.
Definitely.
Yeah, if I can add something in there with the perspective that I was coming from and what Wise Guy just said, was I think that's the bigger thing to take from some of this, is that it's not so much that there's this concerted effort by the government against anarchism. It's more of a thing of when you're in line at the airport and then they want to be able to yell anarchist, anarchist, that they want to be able to use that in order for, you know, additional funding, use it for justification, use it for these things. I mean, they're still going to come after you for whatever reason, but that's how I see a lot of this stuff with the anarchism.
That's all very, very scary. I know if I look at my recommended for you books whenever I log into Amazon, the recommendations actually scare me. So I can't imagine what someone else would think about it. All right, let's move on to topic number two. the Iranian terrorist group Mujahideen al-Qaq are no longer terrorists, according to the U.S. State Department. The MEK has not been officially delisted from the foreign terrorist organizations list, but bureaucrats and diplomats have confirmed the plan to delist the group later this week. In the past years, there's been a lot of U.S. talking heads been acting as high-paid shills for the MEK, advocating for delisting the group, despite a U.S. law making it a felony to provide material support for a terrorist group. Those shills include Howard Dean, Ed Rendell, Wesley Clark, Bill Richardson, Rudy Giuliani, Fran Townsend, Tom Ridge, Mukasey, Andy Card, and Alan Dershowitz. Most astounding is the list, that list of people contains some of the most vocal proponents of going after or prosecuting people who provide material support for terrorists on the list. The delisting will pave the way for U.S. taxpayer funding of the MEK in concert with Israeli government. In recent times, Israel has contracted with the MEK to assassinate Iranian nuclear and defense scientists, as well as destroy Iranian defense facilities. Plato, in the run-up to the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, one of the justifications for the invasion was that Hussein was harboring the MEK in Iraq. Since then, the U.S. military has continued to harbor the MEK on the same military base, doing the exact, giving them the exact same support that Saddam was giving them. Doesn't the terrorist label pretty much depend on who the terrorists are working for?
Yeah, you and Greenwald, Glenn Greenwald, have hit it right on the head here. It's only terrorism if you're opposing U.S. interests. Once these MEK guys turn around and start working with the U.S. and Israel against Iran, they're magically not the bad guys anymore. And Greenwald has a really good book that's called With Liberty and Justice for Some, and he's talking about this two-tier justice system in the U.S. And, you know, he's a law student, and he talks about how the rule of law, the whole idea of the rule of law is that everybody is supposed to be treated equally, and, you know, a king should be able to be held to justice for his crimes. But we obviously have nothing of the sort here. If you or I went and wrote a check to Al-Qaeda, we'd be in Guantanamo before you could say NDAA. But when the U.S. government says, we need these guys now, it's totally okay. I mean, they're in charge. Who's going to stop them?
Okay, so Smuggler, there's quite clearly a dual standard here. But isn't the DOJ doing the right thing by not prosecuting Dershowitz and Giuliani and these guys for being shills?
Well, thing how much I like or dislike shills really isn't of any interest here. So yes, of course they shouldn't be prosecuted. On the other hand, nobody should listen to them anyways. I mean, it's a paid opinion. I mean, please. I mean, it's a waste of airtime when they speak. However, I would like to add that there's not really a double standard at play here. The standard has always been whatever is in the interest of the state is right. And the other standard, that justice and liberty for all standard, that has always been an illusion. So get over it. That's how the world works and always has worked. And that's why we're anarchists.
That goes back to what we were just talking about with this subjective definition of anarchist. It means one thing to the political types and another to the state. And it's the same thing with this terrorism word. You know, it's, I guess, co-opted for whatever interests, whatever self-interest of the state it needs.
Exactly.
Wise guy, here's an instance of the bureaucrats in the U.S. government extricating themselves from affairs in the Middle East. So this could never have a chance of blowback, could it?
Well, one only has to look at how Al-Qaeda formed and Osama bin Laden to see what happens when the U.S. plays these games, but they only focus on the near-term interests. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie that Tom Hanks starred in which he played a senator who was greatly in support of the Mujahideen against the Soviets. But as soon as the United States was able to out the Soviets after providing them support, including Stinger missiles that were quite effective in neutralizing air power, the United States immediately exited because we had won the war. They declared victory and left. With people who had supported the Mujahideen saying that this was a very short-sighted action and that it was going to have incredible consequences later. Well, we sure have seen that, haven't we?
Here, I wanted to ask you this specifically. In the U.S., we're fed a constant diet of obvious bullshit about the Middle East. I mean, it's just in Africa. It's not even close to believable, and yet the majority of the people smile and they'll compliment the cook on what a tasty steak they just got served. It seems like a willful ignorance or a willful suspension of belief, or I'm not sure what it is. What's the reason behind that?
Well, I mean, in the U.S., if you look at what you just said, these reports coming in about overseas stuff with Muslim insurgents and terrorist activity. The fact is that the amount of information that Americans actually see on the stuff that's going out there is actually quite small. What they see usually are just these news clips that, you know, today your heroes, your sons and daughters who are serving their country and protecting freedom, today stopped some type of terrorist attack from happening in XY coordinate somewhere in some country, or suspected terrorists were killed through some type of bombing in this location and that location. So the diet that they're actually fed is something about, you know, your sons just protected you from something that very bad that was going to happen to you here, and then they did it here, and then we're doing this over there. So it's a steady stream of you're being protected, your military is doing a good job, and you can go ahead and enjoy your freedom and be grateful for the sacrifices that they're making and that your tax dollars are paying for. Because if you get on the other side of the story and actually dig into these things, like you hear, like Scott Horton covers a lot on his anti-war radio in the past and on his show right now, he'll go into detail about what actually happened with a particular wedding a wedding ceremony that where people are, you know, blown to smithereens, and the cover up behind it and the details. Glenn Greenwald covers some of it, and there's several other people out there that especially in antiwar.com, you can read about this stuff all the time. You don't hear any of that stuff on the regular diet of information that's coming in with these little news bites of how well things are being protected. So I think that's why they can just go ahead and keep eating their steak, because they're getting such a fluff of the good stuff that's happening with their troops.
I wouldn't even use the word steak. I think that they're being fed a daily diet of soma.
Well, it's definitely a narrative that is intended to, you know, convey a specific message.
The question is, what is the alternative narrative to present to the people? I mean, if you really go down to reality and present things as they are, they get so fucking complicated and there's so many parties and interests involved that you cannot expect the YouTube generation to really keep up their attention to listen long enough to even hear out the argument of one side. So the alternative clearly is stay out of those places and see whatever comes as a fate.
I'd agree with that alternative, Smuggler, but you saying it's too complicated, that's putting you in the same level as Hillary Clinton. Every time she's asked a question of where something is, where the administration's doing something that contradicts it, the very words it's saying, she says, well, it's just too complicated for you peons to understand.
Well, the difference is that I am not enforcing my opinion on the complexity of the world with Jones. That's why I said, I mean, the only two alternatives you have is tell the whole story and nobody will be able to decide, or stay out of those places in the first place and take whatever comes as an act of fate.
Well, I'm not sure I completely agree with that, but it is true that governments always try to seize the narrative that the public understands, either creates the narrative or controls the narrative. And once that happens, most people really don't go beyond that narrative to try to figure out what's happening, as Smuggler says, because the world is a very complex place. Most people either don't have the time, the interest, or the ability to deconstruct going on and understand it.
Yeah, compare, you know, Mark Twain or Jonathan Swift or, you know, anybody from the past couple hundred years with Twilight, and the average person is, I would say, dumber, and they are not going to be able to handle a complicated narrative as well as they would if they had, you know, a proper liberal education. And liberal, there you go, that's another one of those co-opted words that's supposed to mean, you know, you learn grammar, logic, and rhetoric and how to reason. And now it just means, you know, leftist, crazy, whatever.
Well, how far the U.S. has fallen. At the time of the American Revolution, the population in the United States was the most educated in the world, at least in the Western world, even more so than homeland Britain.
I mean, the problem that really comes in here is that there's so much noise in the on the planet today that anything that looks like a clear signal is the only thing that really sticks to the minds today. And I think there's a deliberate strategy behind increasing the noise so that simplistic narratives stick to the minds of the people and make them controllable.
Well said.
Well, you know, one thing I like to ponder sometimes is that we see how, you know, Fox has such of a sway in the U.S. and there's other media outlets out there, and we think, wow, look at the control that they have like never before. But I mean, if you go back, I remember as a child, the only outlets for news were pretty much like the, you know, Dan Rather and Peter Jennings, these guys on ABC, CBS, and NBC News. These were the spokespeople for everything, just a couple of outlets, and then you had your newspapers. So I don't know that everybody is so, I think there's more of a, in some ways there's more groupthink as nations as a whole, but in other ways I also think that there's also, like over the past several years, well, maybe, you know, 10 years, of course, with my time on the internet, I found so many news sources that are fantastic for finding out information that you wouldn't get other places where you could see the complexity of the situation. You can dig into it as deep as you can, as you want to. So as the danger of the group stuff that you see now, I have some hope with the amount of information that is out there and the number of people that are not buying the mainline thing that's being shoved down their throats. There's not as many people eating their steaks today in proportion ignorant bliss as there was back even in the 70s.
Yeah, Smuggler was talking about the YouTube generation with short attention spans. But you got to balance that with the fact that, you know, if you spend enough time searching for something on YouTube, you're going to find what you're looking for. And anybody can go on YouTube and search for like CIA cocaine plane or Gary North, the guy who committed suicide by shooting himself in the head a couple times.
Gary Webb,
right. But this information is out there, and I also agree with Smuggler that there's a shit ton of noise being spammed into the system to try and confuse people. But the information is out there, and I mean, it may take a concerted effort of a lot of smart people to actually deconstruct the legitimate narrative out of this giant noisy signal system, but it's in there somewhere. And I also have hope that collectively, as you know, humans will be able to figure out what's actually going on.
We could all hold hands together and figure it out. All right, let's move on to our next topic. On September 21st, European Digital Rights leaked a working document from Clean IT. This is a nanny project initiated by the Netherlands Counterterrorism Office and funded by the Director General of Home Affairs of the European Commission. Now, this is nominally a project to foster public-private cooperation in blocking or removing terroristic content from the internet, but the working document shows just how far afield the project's come. European Digital Rights claims the private portion of the project is so far supported mainly by companies selling filtering software. Key measures proposed in the working documents include allowing law enforcement agencies to bypass notice requirements to have content removed, penalties for users that link to terrorist content, and legal underpinning of real name rules to prevent anonymous use of online services. The Clean IT Project rebutted EDRI's claim on their website, noting that the leaked document is a working paper and not a concrete proposal. Smuggler, reading the document, it clearly is a working paper. It's disjointed. There's a lot of pie-in-the-sky fluff. It contradicts itself in places, and it would be enormously expensive to implement as a whole. So where is this project on the scale of benign suggestions to, oh, my God, shut it all down?
Well, it's probably tending towards the shut it all down. And I actually disagree that it's a working paper because it's disjointed, pie in the sky and whatever. Because if you know the political process, that is exactly what the political process actually produces as a product. So if you listen to two politicians talking about the same law that has been implemented, you will actually find out that it's disjointed, pie in the sky, totally self-contradicting and enormously expensive. So that is what law is about all the time. And this project really is about this and much more. It's probably actually doable. It's not that unrealistic to do it. There have been numerous proposals over the last 10 years that are linked to strategies like this, and it's pretty obvious that some parties really want that implemented, and they will get it implemented. Clean IT has been flying below the radar of the Civil Rights Bill and the Network Freedom People for a while now, and it only recently appeared and is recently being discussed. And you should know that there are at least two more projects. There's a UK Black Box project and the EU CEO project that are both aiming at the same thing, which is having upload download filters and ISP liability, especially when it comes to the end user networks, that is where the normal citizen slaves connect to the worldwide network. All three of those projects, plus a few others we don't really know too much about, are targeting the same thing. So it's very, very obvious that something like that will be there in the future. And the question is, what do you do? Do you lobby against it? In my opinion, of course not. Encrypt your stuff so you're safe from DPI, build your own networks, and fight the good fight.
Yeah, okay, so as to wise guy to Smuggler's point here, everything about this project looks like a case study in mission creep and regulatory capture.
Could you repeat that? I couldn't understand you.
Yeah, everything about the Clean IT project looks like just a case study in mission creep and regulatory capture. You've got the biggest proponents being the companies who are trying to sell the filtering software to make this happen. Even though the project says it's non-legislative, there's provisions in the working paper that would clearly involve legislation. Handouts to the ISPs, liability shields for the ISPs if they cooperate with law enforcement agencies. Isn't that really the stumbling block to get the ISPs on board to these projects that Smuggler was talking about, is making sure they get enough bennies in the process?
Yeah, I think the same thing will happen as has happened, as Smuggler's talked about, with the mobile carriers and telephone companies, is that if the amount of money is sufficient and it becomes a profit center for those organizations, since they're highly regulated, they have not only no reason, but every incentive to cooperate with the government.
One should actually note to this that the technology in question here, the filters that will be used for that, are dual purpose systems when it comes to the ISP business model. And that is, you can use the same stuff, DPI technology, etc., to boost your business by making sure that you discriminate against traffic that is not well paid, or that you split protocols so you can sell fast protocol access and stuff like that. So there's actually a good reason for an ISP to take part in the whole stuff, and the whole removal of legislation that prevents filtering and surveillance is actually something that ISPs, at least when it comes to the larger ISPs, would really welcome.
So does deep packet inspection, it'll only operate, my understanding is, against simple encryption technologies. If you have something where you're doing padding and you have continuous data streams.
Yeah, wise guy, are you still talking? We completely lost you.
Oh, sorry, I don't know. Something must have happened to my link. I was asking the question as to whether the deep packet inspection was only effective with simple encryption technologies and, of course, unencrypted content, you know, where people are using peer-to-peer with any kind of encrypt type where you have continuous data streams.
Hero, what about that? Is there a chance to use these the inspection schemes for stiffer encryption?
Yeah, I'll give one example with DPI. One way you can get around some simple DPI systems is to use encryption, because the DPI will be looking for particular patterns in the protocols that you're using. But I have someone that I've worked with in the past in Iran, who it was really strange that they were doing deep packet inspection in order to detect encryption and particular encryption protocols. So you try to obfuscate your protocols with encryption, and then they're just like sometimes just looking for encryption. So it's not an easy thing to get around. And Smuggler would be the person to make a comment more on this. But one thing I'd like to ask Smuggler was, at the end of his last statement, he said, and these big companies would want this. Smuggler, can you give us a couple of examples of something specific that these big companies would just go completely gung-ho for implementing this stuff for?
Yeah, of course. To answer your question on why big companies, big ISPs want that, one of the big discussions that's been going on for several years now is how to make more profit on network traffic, internet traffic, and the whole discussion about net neutrality and so on. And currently, the big providers are seeking for methods so they can use DPI technology to discriminate against certain protocols and or optimize certain source-destination relationships when it comes to, you know, for example, that traffic from Google, with Google paying for it, would be delivered faster and with a wider bandwidth than traffic from some unknown search engine like DuckDuckGo or something like that. So this is something that has been in discussion for a while now. And one of the big resistance to that comes from people that say, okay, this would put filtering technology that is bad for civil rights on the network. So essentially what's happening now is that we have a double direction approach, a two-front approach on the technology in the network. And that is, on the one hand, you have the big ISPs that do want DPI to beat net neutrality and charge more for traffic. And on the other hand, you have these groups that want to legislate that DPI technology becomes very legal. So essentially the second group, the clean IT group, is breaking down the arguments of those that resist net neutrality.
I agree with that. Cable companies in the United States particularly have been fighting this battle for some time. Comcast was sanctioned by the Federal Communications Commission for prioritizing data streams on the internet, their internet connections to their customers, so as to disadvantage competitive services that were delivering multimedia, for instance, Netflix, which is a huge company in the United States delivering movie content. So that fight continues, and I can see them certainly wanting to be able to discriminate on the data streams.
Now, this is also a little conflicting with a lot of anarchist standpoint of net neutrality not being an issue that has nothing to do with the government. It has to do with the owners of the pipes doing whatever they want to do with those pipes. And in a free market, if you're providing an internet access service, you can go ahead and give different tiers and higher priority service to different people in any way and shape and form that you want. So it's a little conflicting when someone is saying that this should be the case, and then at the same time, then they shove all this other stuff down your throat, and you're left with a totalitarian system.
Right. I mean, what's really happening through this whole clean IT and similar proposals is that the state is trying, through the back door, to force everyone to have the technology in place to beat both net neutrality and civil liberties on the internet. So it's actually a perfect example of we not being able to just stand back and say we let everyone else do our job. If you're really into free markets and stuff like that, then it's all about competition being really possible by people implementing different strategies. And this is what Clean IT is clearly working against by giving ISPs a liability, by increasing profit for ISPs that do follow the rule of the government by giving them extra packs and stuff like that. So this is a clear example of how the government, through the back door, is meddling with the market all the time. So, yeah.
Well, I think the people who are calling for no restriction on filtering and things like that shouldn't be doing that until we have systems like a Byzantine system where you have open meshed Wi-Fi networks in most locations so that there's really a service that is not going to be able to be suborned so easily as the cable carriers, for example.
Yeah, I think this shows that the direction that things are going is that we are pretty much fucked in the way that this is happening. Because you can see the blocking that's happening in the United Arab Emirates with voice over IP technology with the telephone companies there and all around the world. All the American companies are selling all this technology all over the world. Now with the war on terror and war on drugs and all, everything that we're seeing here, it's all coming down the pike. And they're going to sidestep all types of constitutional and legal issues. It's all getting sidestepped, and or amendments are being pushed around it. This amendment's going to go through because it's called the clean IT thing is going to go through with law. One guarantee that they have is to make sure that they don't call it the Deep Packet Inspection Act. Instead, they call it the Clean IT Act or whatever, so that anyone who votes against it is voting for a dirty, horrible internet. And since this is the way that it's going, we can see this happening. The only way that hope that we have of fighting something like this is by actually implementing everything that Wise Guy was just saying, our own systems, our alternate systems, CJDNS, other Wi-Fi networks, Bitcoin, everybody doing their own internet individually with their own, the internet with the different service levels. I'll charge whatever I want for whatever bandwidth comes through my systems for whatever reason, but it's based upon me as an individual and the people that I network with, not just these big, huge corporations that have back doors and fiber optic wiretaps into the NSA and every other government agency. It's time to move on to something else.
Yeah, I think even if this did get implemented in whole, that adoption of those technologies would be rapid fire, and what you'd end up catching, which is who they want, is the slow kid in the mosque who they can hand a bomb to, and when he pushes the trigger, arrest him for terrorism. Before we move on to our last topic, I'd like to thank our panelists and their sponsors. Smugglers brought to you by Enterplex.net and ShadowLife.cc. ShadowLife.cc. It's a big secret. Hero White is the host of Cypherpunked and Agorist Social Club and co-hosts Coinbase with Plato. Hear all those shows on agoristradio.com, and you can get in contact with Plato via Reddit or Twitter as The Real Plato. We still haven't figured out who's supporting Wise Guy, but whoever it is, we thank them and want them to let them know that the check bounced. And if you're looking for agorist businesses, there's no better place than blackandyellowpages.com. If you have an agorist business and like to list it on Black and Yellow Pages, send me an email, voodoo@blackandyellowpages.com, and I'll get you an invite. Moving on, Strat4 emails released by WikiLeaks indicate the Mexican Special Forces have been used as death squads in the drug war in Mexico. 10,000 murders in the Juarez region from 2008 to 2012 have been blamed on a cartel turf war, But the question now is how many of those murders are attributable to special forces operations? In 2008, Narco News noted, quote, the one clear pattern that emerges from the data is that the murders in Juarez are, in almost all cases, not the result of random violence or shootouts between rival drug gangs. In most cases, they are cold-blooded assassinations, often involving coordinated teams of armed, sometimes masked men who are making use of intelligence, surveillance, and paramilitary-like tactics to take out their victims. In the emails between Stratfor and a Mexican diplomat codenamed MX1, the diplomat said, quote, the military will surgically remove cells that have been previously identified, but for whatever reason were not taken down yet. Periods of adjustment will ensue, but the military will fill any void left in terms of territorial control, ultimately causing the competing drug trafficking organizations to wait or give up. The level of violence by and against cartel members, reporters, and just plain folk in northern Mexico is horrendous, and I think it's going to take decades to get over. Is there any evidence the new Mexican president, Guadalupe Victoria, will discontinue or at least change direction in where Calderon has taken this thing?
It's going to be an interesting thing from some of the stuff that I've been reading about the new president who's not taken office yet. He's kind of in the lame duck status right now. But from some of the stuff that I've heard, the new guy coming in is a motherfucker. He's a badass guy. And he looks, you know, he's got these like Hollywood type political looks, but he actually is like I was saying, like he's a motherfucker. He's not going to mess around. Calderon has, even though Calderon has done a lot of stuff and he's been quite a pussy and not much of a what you would call a leader inside the country, Nieto has an image of strength, and he has a lot of power behind him. So I would see the potential for the violence to dramatic after he takes office. I could see the violence dramatically increasing for a short period of time, and then for the violence to actually be tapering off to a level. I think in this article that you're bringing up here about the assassinations, if you read down at the near the bottom of the article, you see some other articles that are linked that are related, and one of them, I don't think you can take this assassination squads in context without reading the other article that is mentioned there, the U.S.-Mexican officials brokering deals with drug cartels. This is from WikiLeaks documents were showing a lot of this. Now, this is something that a lot of people have been talking about for a long time, and I brought up many times before, how the government has their favorite boys down in Mexico so that they choose particular cartels and what everyone hates. And in this article, the basic deal from the Mexican government and the United States government is, okay, you particular cartel, like the Sinaloa cartel, you guys have, you're the most powerful cartel, and we're going to support you. Just stop the violence. Stop the violence. So a lot of this bloodshed is people trying to eliminate competition and eliminate other people who are just like two-bit drug dealers that are just going completely crazy out there instead of trying to run a real, true, professional drug smuggling operation, which, when it's done inside of a jurisdiction, like inside of the United States, you look at almost all the drug stuff that's done inside the United States. I mean, for the most part, it's done pretty violence-free. I mean, it's very much under control, even though there's still a lot of drug violence on the street between some gangs and stuff like that. But you don't have what you have south of the border in Mexico. So there's too many cartels, there's too many low-life cartels out there. Like these, one of the things that they talk about is these assassination squads. They're sending in, it's actually really almost exactly the same like the United States is doing with the drone operation. And that's what's coming down to Mexico is going to be, all of this stuff is going to transfer over into drone activity, which is very scary. But they'll have reports of, okay, there's a particular group of people over here and they've been doing some kidnapping and they've been doing some other drugs and they're located in these homes and stuff. And they just go in with government, massive government force, and they know full well that when they go in there with full force that someone's going to pull out a gun, and that gives them an excuse to just slaughter everybody. So now some of this execution stuff may not be completely legal, but as long as they go in as an operation and then they clean up everything afterwards, and most of the people that were killed are just like some of these drug addicts. They're actually targeting specifically drug addicts. So why would they be going in there and doing these cleanup assassination operations like in a surgical way, just like they do with the drones? Well, that's when you go back and you see that the U.S. and the Mexican government has said, you guys clean it up. You clean it up, and then your truckloads of your coke and all that stuff can pass through completely fine. But if you continue with this like dirty stuff happening all over the place, then we're going to give you trouble. So I don't know. I feel that what could come with Nieto is a massive crackdown and a massive support of the most powerful cartel, because they will not go against the drug trade here. They just want to clean it up.
Smuggler, I know that you have a technical solution to this problem, and why don't you tell us what that is, or a possible technical solution to this problem. Tell us what that is and what the odds of it actually working.
Well, the thing with the technical solution is there are so many technical solutions I have. I really wonder which one you're referring to.
The one that you gave during the London Bitcoin conference to what you thought would happen with Bitcoin and with Silk Road.
Oh, right. Yeah, the competition on the drug cartels through online drug business, which really means that the cartels are cut out of the deal, at least a little bit, and profit is decreasing for the cartels, which would help as long as you see the cartels as solely being in the business of drugs. And it would for sure help the drug users. And it would make the drug war pretty much obsolete. However, I'd like to warn about something here, and that is there's usually one moment when you see increase of violence in the black market, no matter what drug that is or what product is, and that is when the market shares are fluent. If the different parties haven't settled yet on how to cut up the market, and really what happens with the government coming in here and trying to clean things up really means that the cartels cannot settle the market, cut up the market amongst themselves, and thus never find an equilibrium. So that is one warning. The other warning I'd like to throw in here is that the cartels are not really in the business of drugs, but the cartels are specialized on violence. So even if we get rid of the drug war, we haven't gone red with the cartels. They will simply move into other businesses, most likely into kidnapping and contract murders and stuff like that. So where their skills, so to speak, are most needed. But anyways, Silk Road is still one of the better hopes we have to at least cut down the volume of the market and the profits that really corrupt all our social systems.
Wise guy, do kidnapping and these other businesses stealing the oil, do they even generate enough profits where they could support these gigantic cartel operations?
Well, yes, and even more importantly, you'll find that the thefts of raw materials and oil and things like that are really done at the level of governments. And this is also sort of in a connected area to the offshore banking markets. Most people have been told through the narrative of governments that the offshore banking system is there really to serve as a means of tax evasion for the wealthy and large corporations. But in reality, it's a means in which governments and their secret slush funds and black ops units can move their money around and actually get the money that they need. So you'll see, especially in places like Africa, France was using its former colonies after they so-called had their independence as really puppets in order to generate money for their intelligence agencies and slush funds. And so I think it's part of a bigger, you know, sort of a pie or bigger situation than even with the drug cartels.
All this drug violence is fucking awful. I hate it. The only thing I really have to add is that Vice magazine this week published a very interesting series called The Mexican Mormon War. And it's about the drug cartels versus Mormon colony, I think south of Juarez.
All right. Sounds like everybody should check that out.
One more thing. And that is an area that I've pontificated on before. And that is that even though services like Silk Road are first step towards reducing violence and reducing the profit in the markets that cause the violence, I think that it's only a first step because you still have the delivery of products, you still have trust issues between the parties. I think that ultimately what we want to see is genomics take the lead, and that is to genetically engineer otherwise common and legal plants so that they can express the chemicals that the people are desirous of for their highs. Once that happens, then you no longer have any distribution, and people in their privacy of their own homes, and with no more skills than making beer. Well, I'm sure we'll start seeing raids on beer-making people soon. They'll be able to create all of the chemicals to get them high on their weekend tours.
Yo, Doug, I put some grass in your grass.
Well, the problem here is that really it's not the plant that is illegal, it's the chemical that is. And as you have seen with the raids on home grows before, they're getting after the chemical wherever they can find it. So I don't think it's a full solution. And the other thing is, I actually want a professional to grow my drugs if I were using drugs. And I don't want to do it all myself. You know, I'm busy doing other things. So I do think that we will see something like a combination of things. We'll have Silk Road and home grows selling through Silk Road, and thus not having border crossings and shipping internationally. But you will buy something from a New York home grower and then consume it in Chicago or something like that. So that is probably the combination we'll be looking at in the future, and that is kind of awesome.
Okay, one final point that I wanted to make, and I kind of hinted at it a little bit, was that besides a Silk Road thing and the market being diluted and some other alternate things happening in the future, in the meantime, I think what we're going to see in Mexico is going to be what you've seen in Afghanistan, in Pakistan and Somalia, where you have massive amounts of investment in drone technology, and then you have these basically assassination bombing squads happening on a regular basis and all over the Mexican country. And the people are going to be okay with it because to them it's going to be the cockroaches of the country are getting taken out. They're going to accept it, and there'll be some people waving their hands and saying this is wrong to just do summary assassinations, but people are sick of the violence in Mexico, and it's all getting blamed on the narcos. And so taking them all out will be part of a plan of monopolizing the central cartels. So all of the competition is just going to be put on these particular hit lists, and it's going to happen all over the place. So Pakistan, Afghanistan, it's all coming down to Mexico, and all mostly financed through U.S. Programs and, of course, U.S. Military equipment.
Yeah, I have to second that. I do actually think that the surveillance-fed targeted drone approaches and attacks is exactly what will be the strategy in the future to deal with failing states or with the parties within failing states. And people, prepare yourself, watch closely. It's coming to your place as well.
You mean the U.S. is a failed state or failing state?
Absolutely. Maybe not fully yet, but it's about to. I do actually think that everything short of a full totalitarian state is a failing state by today's definition.
Well, this pretty much follows what happened to Rome. I mean, Rome collapsed, its republican basis collapsed when it became so corrupt and ineffective. And then, of course, they switched over to an imperial Rome. For some time, that imperial Rome was actually a much better place for most people. So what you're saying, Smuggler, really fits in. And also what Hero is saying is that, you know, most people just want to be able to live their life and have a reasonably secure existence and some opportunity to protect themselves and their family and enjoy life. And if that means that they have to give up civil liberties in large part in order to achieve that, most people are willing to do that.
I have it on high authority that both New York and Chicago are drug-free zones. Anyway, that's all the time we have for Reality Exploit Roundtable Episode 10. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and invite you to join in the conversation on the Pound Agora IRC channel on enterplex.net. If you go to enterplex.net, there's instructions on how to connect. Thanks to Smuggler, Wise Guy, Plato, and Hero for joining me today. Links to the topics we discussed can be found in the show notes at agorastradio.com, as well as archives of previous Reality Exploit Roundtables. Thank you for listening to Reality Exploit Roundtable, Episode 10.
I can't speak for my other girlfriends, but I have always preferred a man in the middle.